Blog Talk Radio.
Today, two famous Englishmen were responsible for the British Imperial Empire. The first one was Robert Clive, who was with the British East India Company. And we got in his lifetime, he had this mercenary army for this British East India Company, which was trying to conquer India and to deal with the Maharajas and all that. Anyway, there was several battles, and there was the Indians won in one battle, and they put these people into what was known as the Black Hole of Calcutta. But Clive won, and this famous movie, Clive of India, made during the 30s. Another thing about Clive was in that whole period, there was forcible circumcision when you were sent abroad. And the reason it was done was forcible was because if the natives got you, like the Muslims, and they captured Englishmen especially, they would do a half circumcision. It was very often painful, not only painful, but you get infection and all that. It happened to British troops. Sir Robert Baird in one case and his whole battalion. That was later, but they call it being carved. Now, the other famous Englishman about the same time as Clive, and it was a movie with Tyrone Power, was Sir Horatio Nelson. There was also another movie with Laurence Olivier. And Horatio Nelson was he was a vice admiral. And he was probably England's greatest naval strategist in that period. And he defeated the French Navy at the Battle of the Nile and most famous battle, which cost him his life, Battle of Trafalgar, which was done during the Napoleonic Wars. And if you go to London, you will see Trafalgar Square and the statue of Horatio Nelson. When he was killed at... mortally injured at the Battle of Trafalgar, a French sailor shot him through the shoulder. This famous line was, "England expects every man to do his duty," and also Hardy was the captain of the ship, although it was the flagship, the Victory. Before Nelson died, he said, "Kiss me, Hardy." There's nothing homosexual about that. And they stuck Horatio Nelson's body in a cask of, I think it was port, or wine, and to preserve it, so bring it back to England for state funeral. And there's a couple of movies, one with Vivien Leigh and Sir Laurence Olivier about Horatio Nelson. The other one is about the English insurance company Lloyd's of London, which Tyrone Power supposedly put together a consortium to back the British Navy, to finance them, and to finance Horatio Nelson, who was friend of Tyrone Power. I forgot the role he played, but it was called Lloyd's of London, another famous 30 film. And then there's Clive of India, another 30 famous film. Excuse me. An important issue on the California ballot in for this November 2014 election is Proposition 46, which mandates the drug testing of doctors and other medical personnel. And, of course, a lot of the professional organizations and nurses who have been co-opted are opposed to this proposition, claiming that it will expose your private medical records. They can be hacked and blah, 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 all of that. What's the fact of the matter is there are doctors who are who have an alcohol problem, and there are doctors who are druggy doctors that are known as pill doctors. And I know two instances personally, and another instance where this doctor who's retired and called a so-called independent medical examiner, was no such category, falsified medical records in a criminal case, and which involved bribery, illegal alien, and injury to the American citizen. But these are some of the things that are going on. Also, we have the case of this doctor in Philadelphia, a black doctor, who was drugging, using dirty needles, all kinds of unprofessional, illegal, and unethical medical practices involving drugs and abortions and horrible things that he did to fetuses. And these are just a few cases. But the most notorious case here in San Francisco and in California, which cost the California taxpayers an estimated $4 to $5 million settlement, was the case of Dr. Alton Freeman, who's a psychiatrist at San Francisco General. He had a patient named Mario A.J. Mondelli. He drugged this patient, lured him into a homosexual relationship, drugged him, and then when something went wrong, he tried to axe murder him. The doctor also reportedly had AIDS. Now, Mondelli sued, and the city did a suppressed settlement. Mondelli sued for $5 million. Mondelli is still alive, as far as I know. Freeman had a bail, which he jumped bail, and for some reason, the judge in this case, a lesbian, not Angela Bradstreet, but Boulain, didn't revoke his bail. He fled to Santa Barbara and was living in a trailer. The Santa Barbara sheriff apprehended him, brought him back to San Francisco, and I happened to be in the Hall of Justice up in the jail section when the Santa Barbara sheriff's deputy had his file and brought him back to put him back in the custody of the San Francisco authorities. And his file was red flagged. Apparently, what I saw on it was AIDS, or communicable disease. But anyway, what is also interesting was this corrupt judge who, after Freeman was convicted, he got a 30-day, he was sentenced to San Quentin prison. He got a 30-day stay not to show up at San Quentin prison. This is unheard of. We don't know if Freeman is still alive. He certainly, I think he lost his medical license. This is just one of the worst instances of a doctor who is on drugs, who drugs patients, and not only that, lured him into a sexual relationship and then tried to murder him, axe murder him in this case. We will put up the court documents. Now, another thing that's going on, as everybody knows, California is in another one of its droughts. If you remember the 1989 drought, drought has preceded earthquakes, and we've had several earthquakes around California, but none hitting San Francisco just yet, although it's expected. Now, one of the probably the most expensive single waste of water occurred at 1866 Turk Street in San Francisco, where this housing authority executive, she's making about $45,000 a year, she had a dollar a month house illegally, and she was wasting water in the amount of $500 a month. It was water leakage, which she didn't get fixed. And she refused to pay the dollar a month rent, claiming that the house was owed her because she was black and was promised because she was dislocated by the redevelopment agencies. She died. Also, the police busted her house because it was a fence for stolen goods and drugs, and we have those documents. Of course, this was censored and suppressed in the San Francisco and California press. Another reason why these people are seen as morons in media. So many things get covered up, and it's costing the taxpayer millions of dollars, and people are abused, they are suffering. And of course, the media morons and corrupt lawyers and corrupt politicians look at the victims and figure, well, they can't afford a lawyer, they don't know how to fight back, or they can't fight back. But there are people out there who are fighting for them and will continue to do so. Among the interesting deaths on this day, 1970, Edward Everett Horton died. Now, he was the fop in the Fred Astaire, Ginger Roger movies. The Horton is significant because he is the uncle of Judge Horton, a San Francisco probate judge who was a former Office of Strategic Service, our World War II spy service. She was an employee of that organization, which later became the CIA. She was also the probate judge in the Juan Piferre Argentine Bank Holocaust asset threats. Excuse me. And what's interesting is that in the Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire movies, Fred Astaire's sister Adele Rogers married Lord Cavendish, an English aristocrat. His grandfather, the first Lord Cavendish, was a representative of the Prime Minister of England during the Troubles in Ireland in the late 1800s. And Cavendish was assassinated, in Dublin by one of the by the grandfather of Terence Hallinan. Patrick Hallinan was part of this Irish supposedly Free Ireland group, and they were a bunch of terrorists. Patrick Hallinan fled to the United States and became a streetcar driver. For some reason, he wasn't extradited back to face criminal charges in England for assassinating Lord Cavendish. But there's a lot of history here in these cases that I have worked on, and it's quite interesting. Now, we're going to play just this little clip from of Horton from our archives.
Never mind. It's so incomprehensible. It doesn't seem quite sensible. And yet I like it. Please, that's not me. It's almost quite reliable. And yet it's quite enjoyable. Ooh, I'm full of rhapsody. Too many people here. Ripping, skipping, lightly bounding.
Stop it. Stop it.
Really? This is most astounding.
It makes one feel so thrillable.
Well, it exhausted every syllable.
I crave frivolity.
And that one, that's not
Horton starred in quite a few movies with Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. Talking about that same period, or roughly the same period, actually it was 20s, in Political Animals, our segment today, 10 years ago we were working on the book Political Animals, and it was about all the presidents and their animals in their lives, a lot of unusual things. Warren Hardin had a dog called Letty Boy. He was also the first president with black ancestry, not Mr. O, but Mr. Obama. Black writer Ismael Reed had an article in this past Sunday Chronicle magazine, and he talks about putting Warren Harding's, carving him on Mount Rushmore because he was a lover. But he also, Ismael did write that Warren Harding was supposedly had black blood. Well, this is not a new charge, a new issue. Back in when Warren Harding was running for president, one of the accusations against him was he was accused of being, quote, the term Negro. Now, Harding replied, "I can't help it if one of my ancestors jumped over the back fence." Now, there is a marriage certificate of his ancestors, one of his ancestors, and also his cousins, and they're all black. Now, this is not unusual. We had the late senator, a racist senator from South Carolina, Thurgood, who had a sexual relationship and had a child by a black servant. And for years, and of course, he was one of the biggest racist in Congress. He was known as the Dixiecrat. So a lot of this slipping into the slave quarters or the servants' quarters and slipping between the sheets, as they used to say, went on in the South. In fact, if I can genteelly use this term, I've heard this from other Southern boys, the Southern youth, that they were told by their male relatives that the first sexual relationship they should have is with a black girl, teach them about sexuality. And, of course, they wouldn't. They would do this. They'd slip into the quarters at night and slip under the sheets, and they'd be gone in the morning, and they would, if they'd meet these people on the street, these black people on the street that they had had a sexual relationship with, they wouldn't acknowledge them. So this is that kind of dual relationship that went on in the South. Now, among the events today, in 1789, the United States decided to have a regular army. Also, in 1829, getting back to the British, Scotland Yard, the famous detective, the agency of Britain, or the United Kingdom, as they're called, they want to be called that, was set up, and Sir Robert Peel set up what are called the Bobbies. And, of course, they're called Bobbies because Robert Peel decided to have a regular police force because there was all this corruption with the undisciplined and unregulated police force that they had before Robert Peel set up the Bobbies. Also in 1918, finally, talking about World War One, the Allies broke through the Hindenburg Line, and this the next month, November, forced the armistice on the Germans and the Austrians. And, of course, we had Armistice Day, November 11th. In 1936, now this is controversial, radio was not first used in a presidential campaign. Radio, the returns, radio was used to broadcast the returns of the 1920 election, which is the only election in U.S. history where all three candidates were journalists. Warren Harding was the editor and publisher of his Ohio paper. Cox was the editor and publisher of his Ohio paper. And then there was a Philadelphia Inquirer reporter on a third party. He also ran, and the returns were reported on radio. That was before FDR decided to use the radio so very successfully. 1944, this is important, the Soviet troops invaded Yugoslavia and helped Tito deal with the right-wing supporters of Nazi Germany. And, of course, Tito later asserted his independence, and Stalin was very peed off. But Tito acted like Nero, not Nero, a Nehru, and decided to be a third force in the world. He wasn't going to let the Russians kick him around. He wasn't going to let the Americans forcibly influence him. And Tito kept Yugoslavia together. But after he died, a lot of people attended his funeral. He also had a German shepherd. A lot of people didn't know this about Tito. He spoke several languages. He was a mechanic at Mercedes-Benz. I don't think he finished high school. Quite a guy, Joseph Brzezinski Tito. And it's interesting how West did not know how to deal with Tito, but he managed to tell the Russians, "You're not going to dictate to me," and Stalin didn't know what to do. And now this is also interesting. When Massachusetts was first set up as a colony back in the late 17th century, Roman Catholics could not set up churches or practice their faith openly. It wasn't until 1803 that Massachusetts permitted Catholics, Roman Catholics, to set up a church. Now, what's interesting about Massachusetts today, the majority of Catholics in Congress come from Massachusetts. There are several that come from Illinois, but Massachusetts has more Catholics in Congress than any other state. Also on this day, Washington National Cathedral was started. Now, the original name for Washington National Cathedral, which was Anglican or Episcopal, is St. Peter and Paul, not the one, the Roman Catholic St. Peter and Paul here in San Francisco. I'm losing my voice again. Sorry, folks. So go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. We're going to get our updated YouTube stuff up. I've been really slow with this cold and dealing. I've had an injury, and so we've got a lot of stuff in the can, and we will be getting this stuff up. So we are going to end early, and where the heck are we? So we'll end with our usual politics and poker. Excuse me. So let me get it here. Where is it? Here we go. Politics and poker. Okay.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Toss your five. Tony. Up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Fight, wine.
Me too.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We got to pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's it about we should make Jack Riley the gun?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say, neither one. I never even met him.
I say, when you got a pair of Jack, better.
Politics and poker, politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. He's a game for children, he's a game is rough.
Politics or poker, which is more important?
Parrot raise.
Bet him.
Little craze, little gold.
I'll say. Straight to mine.
I'll fall.
I'll hold.
Raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Yeah.
done.
Try Michael Fajicinkovich, I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out, I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?